What's up, everyone, and welcome to From the Lions Cove podcast. I'm your host, Marcelo. Today, we have a very special guest, my man, Coach Nick. Nick, pleasure to have you on the podcast today.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah, so to give Coach Nick a proper introduction, his name is Nick Sharia, former coach at Orange High School, now coaches at University School. I've known Coach Nick for a while, probably since like my sophomore or maybe even freshman year.
Yeah, I don't remember.
So yeah, going back to a long time, one of our former coaches from Mayfield actually transferred to Orange and then eventually started going to their open gyms, their open runs. And we'll kind of talk about that throughout this podcast, but just great memories. And I've known Coach Nick ever since then. So it's been a blessing just to stay in touch. And yeah, thank you again for coming on the show today.
Sure, it's my pleasure.
Yeah, so the first question is, what initially drew you to the game of basketball? And who or what inspired you to become a coach?
Yeah, so it's a really good question. I was thinking about it all day. I think the thing that drew me to basketball most was just how accessible it is. Like, you could just play by yourself in your driveway, and I think that's where I got my passion. It's not like baseball where you need someone to play catch with, right, or football. So I just remember maybe kindergarten or first grade just picking up a ball and shooting and just loving it. So played kindergarten to into high school, and then stopped playing after my sophomore year. And I think that's kind of what drew me into coaching. So when I was a freshman and a sophomore playing for Mayfield on the freshman and JV team, there were things I think that I was thinking, oh, like if and when I become a coach, because I kind of knew at that point, I'm going to do this exactly how these coaches are doing it. And then on the other hand, oh, like I definitely want to do this, that maybe they're not doing it. So that was, it's actually funny. Like I look back, I had this binder of stuff from high school. I was like, these are the things I'm going to do when I'm a coach. Yeah. So I kind of knew at that point. And then if I look at people, I think there were two really, important people at that time. So one is Chip Tye. He was the head coach of St. Pascal Baylon.
Okay.
And I helped him my senior year of high school, just kind of coach that team. And one thing I remember about him is his practices were just so much fun. Like, I just enjoy being there every second. He's just a fun-loving guy, hilarious dude. And I was like, okay, I want to be like that. And then another guy, Rich Newland, who was a varsity volunteer coach for Mayfield. I never played for him.
Yeah.
But he, like, did a lot of off-season stuff. And I mean, he's just, like, one of the hardest-working people I've ever seen. And now he is at St. Joe's, and he's won multiple state championships.
Wow.
With his son. On the team back in like 2015, I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, seeing those two were kind of my idols to say like, this is definitely what I want to do. They were definitely inspiring me to get into this profession.
Wow. So when you like first, you know, were playing high school basketball,
yeah.
Would you like also like search up plays or like search up things that you would kind of save that like you implement like in like today's game?
For sure. Like, I have stuff on Google Docs from, like, 10 years, like, 15 years ago. It's unbelievable.
Wow.
And I also have a crazy good memory.
Yeah.
So I remember things that, like, Greg Popovich said during the Spurs run in, like, 2013.
Yeah.
Like, when I graduated high school. And I definitely fall back on those things. So it's really funny. I kind of knew definitely that I wasn't good enough to be a player to go anywhere. But I knew that I wanted to be a coach. And I have like fallen back on those things for many years.
Yeah, like I have plays like saved on like my phone from like Instagram reels.
Yep.
And just like old like stuff that like I've seen, and even drills that like I used to do in like high school, even in like middle school.
So awesome. So
yeah, just like, you know, looking back on all that, even with your experience, I'm sure that helps you like, you know, with your coaching today.
For sure. I mean one thing I've always thought about is I've had all these, like I said, a binder full of stuff, but you're never really prepared for your first coaching experience.
Yeah.
Like you have things and you're like, okay, this is going to happen. I'm going to do this, right? Or I'm going to come in with these 10 set plays that I saw the Spurs run, and it's going to be so well run.
Yeah.
And then you realize like you're not ready for this,
yeah.
Which is fine. Like, I don't think anyone's ready for their first. It's like for their first head coaching experience.
Yeah.
And when I become a varsity head coach, I'm sure I won't be ready for that either. But it's just like learning on the fly and, you know, going through stuff in your head and trying to do your best. And then, you know, if you fail, you figure it out.
Yeah. So you started your coaching career at Orange, right?
Yep.
So, what challenges did you face while coaching at the freshman and the JV levels, and how did you overcome them?
Yeah, so I think in my first year when I was the freshman coach, like I said, you're not really ready. So I didn't even know I really wanted to take on being a freshman head coach when I did. So I got out of college at Xavier, and Coach Newland called me, and he said one of my best friends just took the varsity coaching job at Orange, Coach Ward. And I didn't know Coach Ward. And he said he's looking for a freshman coach. Would you want to do that? Like, it was late. It was like August, and they didn't have a freshman coach. So I initially said no. Like, it's too big for me. It's too scary. I don't want to, like, 14-year-old, like, dealing with those. I'm like, I don't want to do that. And then I called back a day later and I said, I think I want to do it now, just like in a day. And he's like, okay. And so I got it, but I wasn't ready. So I think what I was trying to do in my first year was kind of be the coach, be a coach, but I wasn't being myself. Right. So I was just kind of doing things that I thought like every coach does. Like, oh, that's what Tom Izzo does. That's what Bill Self does. Right. Like, because I had all these notes of this is what these really successful coaches do. But I was losing touch with myself. So in my first year, we ran more sprints than the rest of my career combined. And I was just kind of like a jerk, honestly, because that's what I knew. Like, when a player doesn't do something, you punish them with running. Right? Or you punish them with this, or you take away their playing time. And then the best thing that's ever happened to me was after my first year, I sent out a survey to all my players, and I do it after most years. And it said, like, I get to evaluate you after every year. So I think it's only best if you get to evaluate me. And some of my players, and I can even remember what they said, like, were really, really harsh on me. But it made me way better. They said things like, you make us run too much. We don't get to play a lot of basketball. Like, practices are not fun. And also, like, things that I wanted to be, like chip tie, really fun practices. Like, I don't think I was doing that. So I really had to take a look in the mirror. And a book I read, it's called The 21st Century Basketball Practice, really made me evaluate those things. And it talked about, like, practices should be fun. You should get conditioning playing basketball instead of making your players run. Your players shouldn't have to run after they miss a layup because that's not going to help them make a layup. You should practice more on layups, right? But every coach makes you run doesn't even make sense.
I know.
But that's just what I did. It just traditionally. So this book slash all these players saying these things made me reflect, and I came a long way. I don't think I've ever come that far from a year to year as my first year to my second year, and then we could talk about my second year. Which was a really memorable experience.
I like what's crazy is that like throughout my time in like high school, obviously like my freshman year, we didn't really run a lot, and those were kind of like my favorite practices, just like just playing 5 and 5 up and down, and also like running, but also doing drills, like kind of like running catch shoot three, like just constant moving. Then sophomore and junior year, it was kind of like different, didn't really run a whole lot. I'll never forget my senior season. I mean, we ran a ton. Like we had to do the ladder, like where it's like horizontal running instead of like like straight. And I remember you had to get like beat like a time in like 17 seconds, run back and forth 7 times in like 17 seconds, and that was not fun, because if someone like messes up, then it's like everyone has to do it, and that just wasn't fun. But I feel like now looking back on it, it almost made me like enjoy running now, because it's like, okay, now like I'm not running under a certain amount of time, I'm not under a lot of pressure to make it, because if I don't make it, then my whole team will run. So just like now, it's like I can go on a, like a 2 mile run, 3 mile run, and I'm like loving it. I'm like, man, this is awesome.
That's interesting because that's probably not how most people think after those experiences. Like, I didn't like running because that's what I felt. I think a lot of players now view, like, oh, if I miss a layup and then I have to run, that makes it a negative thing. But that's good that you turn it into a positive.
Like most people like should see it as positive, because I mean like there's so many benefits like with running,
For sure.
but I feel like most kids in high school, like they like see that as kind of like a bad thing. But if you can change that perspective, like that's a plus. But obviously I was once in that shoes. So
Yes. For sure.
can so Can you share a memorable success story from your time at Orange High School? I mean, obviously, I'm sure you have a ton of great memories, but if you had to pick one.
Yeah, so I kind of referenced it. My second year was the best coaching season, most fulfilling coaching season of my career. So I have this season where my first year we probably won 12 games, pretty average. And then I took all this feedback and I got to work and I got better. And then it just kind of was a perfect timing because I got some really, really good players the next year and we went 19-1. And
Wow.
we only lost one game by 1 point to Bedford. It was such a great year. And I mean, going 19-1 obviously is awesome, but really what I think back about that team, they were just like the most selfless group that I've ever been around. I think of two things specifically. One is in every single game, every single kid on the bench who, like, we could talk about the last kid on the bench, they always cheered for the guy in front of them. And I think that's such a great example of culture, is when guys who are literally losing playing time to other people still have the selflessness to root for them, like genuinely root for them. Like, kid makes a three and the other kid is, the backup is standing up going crazy. Like, that's awesome, right? And then the other thing I think about is, so I told a kid at the end of the year that he was going to be our MVP, and he texted me and said, "I think you should also make this kid a co-MVP with me." And I didn't even think about that option. And I totally did it. I was like, "I'm totally on board with that." So just another example of crazy selflessness, and that's why they were really good. But there's a lot of skilled teams that don't go 19-1, and the selflessness was the differential for that team, and it was just such a good team to be around.
I mean, like, my freshman year we went 20-2, and just like talking about that group, very selfless, and those are like the best teammates and the best people just to be around because they want to see other people win, and they're not just focused on themselves. Whereas nowadays you see a lot of ISO ball, you see a lot of okay, give me the ball to score. Whereas if you're on a selfless team, that just brings a different energy and a different vibe, and it creates just a positive experience for everyone. Whether you're the MVP or you're the last guy on the bench, it just creates that special bond.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
Yeah, like I have one teammate. Shout out, my boy Momo, one of like my best friends, one of the most selfless guys. Like just always standing up for everyone, just always just showing love. Those teammates you just never forget. And also when you see them too, I'm sure when they see each other outside, I'm sure they still talk about
Oh
those
yeah.
days, still even talk to you about those
Yeah, I mean,
times.
I know our guys from that team, which was 6, 7 years ago. They're still watching the games. Like, it's just so much fun to be a part of.
Wow. Truly, truly a blessing.
Yep.
So, can you tell us about the Orange Summer Runs and what they meant for player development? So, to kind of, I guess, give a proper intro to this. So, my former coach from Mayfield went to Orange to coach, and Coach Nick said, "Hey, bring like five Mayfield guys one day." And I will never forget because like this is still like stuck in like my head. So we walk in and I expected there to be like just like one team there, just like five guys. I was like, all right, like this will be a sweet like 5-on-5 game. I walk in there, the music is just bumping. This is like at like 9 in the morning. I'm like, oh my gosh, the music's bumping, everyone's getting shots up, and there's probably like 15 people there. And they were all from like different schools. I mean, you had some Brush, you had some Warrensville Heights, you had, Orange, obviously. I mean, it was awesome. And I'll never forget like the first time we played. It was Orange versus us Mayfield guys. And I'll never forget Aaron Zarbavel. Shout out Aaron if you're ever watching this. Like the Orange team was kicking our butts, and I'll never forget it. And Aaron, he kind of had a little bit of push off, but he did break my ankles, and then he splashed it for the win right in my face. And then Coach Ward at the time was like, he's like, you Mayfield kids are soft. And I was like, man. So yeah, a little backstory there, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think you referenced it. I just remember the intensity of those things. I mean, it was crazy, right? I think I remember Beachwood being there, which is obviously our rival. So, so much fun, so much, so crazy. I think it kind of relates back to one of my biggest coaching philosophies now is like, how do you get better? Play, right? Play 5-on-5. Play against really good competition. so much more fun and so much better in terms of for improvement than doing a three-man weave, right?
Yeah, so much better.
So it gets guys in the gym. Like, I know there's probably a lot of coaches who say, gosh, we don't get enough guys in the gym in the summer, and you can't make it mandatory per OSHA rules, so what do you do? Well, you got to make it fun for them to be there and competitive and make them want to get better and see that they do get better.
Yeah.
And that was such a good idea. And now at US, we kind of put our own twist on it. So we don't bring guys from other schools in, okay. But this past summer, we brought in guys who are US guys who play in college now. So we have a few guys at Denison. We have a kid at Oberlin, a few other places too. One of them at Williams now in the top 25 for D3 in the preseason poll. Our coach just told me. Kid at Case. So they all played against our team, our returning guys, and it was a lot like that where it was really competitive. Our guys got a few wins. We probably played them 12 or 14 times throughout the summer, got a few big wins, and I think that's going to really help us when the season comes.
Wow. Yeah, and like even like coming like from like a different school, like, you know, viewing it all from like, you know, like viewing, like looking down on it. I mean, just like – It just puts you in an uncomfortable spot because, you know, if you're a new kid, you're coming in, it's a whole new environment. There's a bunch of different people there. And, you know, it just kind of shows, hey, like, you have to make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, like, if you want to make a name for yourself, like, you have to really perform your best there. And it kind of, it's what kind of built that intensity.
Yes.
So, like, it just created that, you know, like, okay, like, you know, it's time. Like, and, like, you know, maybe you're playing with Orange kids at times. Maybe you're playing with some Mayfield kids. Mm-hmm. Maybe you're playing with Beachwood. But, you know, it's still like, okay, you got to come together as a team and win, make a name for yourself.
Yeah.
And that's truly something that I'll never forget. Like, yeah. I still have old videos and old pictures of it. And just like, man, like those were great times for sure.
So cool.
So obviously you started off at Orange, eventually made your way to university school. So what were some of the biggest adjustments you had when making that transition? From coaching at Orange and then to your current role at US?
Yeah, so I was the freshman coach at Orange for 2 years, JV coach for 1 year, and then Coach Ward left to go to St. Joe's. And so I had a few options. One was to go with Coach Ward, but I chose to go to US because it was really hard to pass up. There were so many great things about US that I think made it the right fit for me, but there were a lot of things that made me pretty uncomfortable. So number one, our head coach was pretty open about what I did, like as my role there. But I think being a varsity assistant was the best path for me at US, but that was something I'd never done. Yeah. Right. I had never been with a varsity team. I had never been an assistant and I'd never been at a private school because I went to Mayfield. So, and coached at Orange. So a lot of things were new to me. But maybe the biggest thing that was new to me was I had such good relationships with the Orange guys, right?
Yeah.
After multiple years of just developing that relationship and team meals and just tons of, you know, opportunities to be with them and support them. And then I'm entering US during COVID year. So it was really uncomfortable. And I'm a pretty big introvert, so I'm not the best at being in like new social situations, which was really kind of frightening to me. But then I kind of realized, I mean, the first year team at US was really, really good. They had lost to Mentor in the district semis the year before.
Very good.
So it was hard. We had, I think, 9 seniors that year. Really good team. Lots of guys going to play in college, but a lot of guys who were set in their ways, and not as a diss to them, right? But they just didn't want to hear from this Orange JV coach. Like, who is this guy? He doesn't have a relationship. Why should I listen to him? So it was really hard my first year to kind of connect with those guys. But every day as the off season began after that year, I was like, okay, this is definitely where I want to be. I started to create those relationships. I started to see how guys, like a lot of the kids at US are very similar to Orange kids.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it's in the same community.
Yeah.
And I started to be like, okay, I can do this. And I did the same things I did at Orange. Like, it wasn't rocket science, right? Connect with your players. Share with them your story. Yeah. Listen to their story. But it took a little while to really settle in.
Wow. So, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, Orange isn't too far from US. But, I mean, just like the different environments, I'm sure it was pretty, like, nerve-wracking for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different environment, especially academically. I mean, US is... has unbelievable academic standards.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there are guys who play at lower levels who might be a good fit in terms of athletics for US, but academically they just can't get in. So it definitely brings challenges to the situation. And then there's obviously some crazy positive things for US, but there are definitely those things that make it harder, but also make it really fun. And I mean, I think about one thing where I was like, man, this place is just so different than anything I've ever been is. So at the end of our year, kind of celebration at the end after the season, we have a really cool thing where we do where every player gets to talk about a teammate of theirs. So like, wow. You'll talk about me and then I'll talk about John and John will talk about this kid, right? And it just goes on. It's like 2-minute speeches. And the first time we did it, right before, like, we're in practice, it's during the spring and guys are practicing, and then like maybe an hour left before this thing and everyone kind of leaves, and then all of a sudden these guys start flooding in and they all have notes, and I thought they were just gonna like rattle it off the top of their, and these kids are coming with like and they're editing each other's. I'm like, whoa, this is so different. They're just so like resourceful and they want feedback, and it shows what a great environment we have. Yeah.
Truly, truly beautiful.
Yes.
So what are your goals for the basketball program at US in the upcoming year? Obviously, you know, you've had some talented players over the past 2 years.
Yeah. So one thing that's interesting about me that you might not know is that I don't really like goals.
Really?
How traditional people think about
goals. Well, yeah, okay? Yeah.
So I am way more about process over like result. Like, so I'm not going to sit here and say I want to win a state championship or I want to go 22-0. I really think about the process and what that's going to take to get to those big things, right? So I think one thing that I think about all the time is when we play at Open Gym, I think it's different than other schools would do it. So if you came into our Open Gym and there wasn't coaching, because we're not allowed to coach, right, you would see our offense being ran exactly how it would be in a game. Like, we don't just like do 5-on-5 and just like play recess ball. Like, yeah. And this isn't something I've ever really said, hey, we need to do this, but we do a ton of handoffs in half court offense. And if you watch our half court offense against our guys in today, then you would see exactly what we do. And that's one thing I think that's a huge process goal, is to continuing to develop our brand. I think we play a very, very unique style of basketball. And that obviously, on one hand, breeds a lot of criticism when it doesn't go well, because it looks so different than every other team.
Yeah.
We press the entire game. There was only one team on our schedule this past season that in the fourth quarter we said we can't press this team. And that was the first time we played them. And the second time we played them, we went back to pressing and it actually won the game for us.
Yeah.
So just one team the whole year. I mean, when we play St. Ed's at St. Ed's, like, we're going to press. And if we lose by 40, we thought that was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So it's really a brand. Like, we even have shirts that I brought here. So it says Gamble and Scramble.
Wow.
And it's like the Vegas sign. Shout out to Robbie Abu, who created this. He's now at Middlebury College. It's so cool. So, like, it's a brand for basketball. It's also a brand for the school. Like, you see kids who don't play basketball wearing these t-shirts, and it's kind of a symbol of, like, we're going to play extremely hard.
Yeah.
We're going to probably be underdogs in some games. We're definitely never going to beat the other team in terms of height. But in our second game this past year, we beat Maple Heights, and we only did it because we believed and we played the style of basketball. We always say, like, we're never going to beat these teams. Like, we play Green in the Federal League. Like, they're so big. They're so strong. We're never going to beat those teams in wrestling matches, ever, right? We have to beat them in track meets. Yeah. So how do you beat a team in a track meet? You run really fast in transition. You have sometimes long possessions where there's just constant movement, and eventually it's just like, okay, like, we give up, right? And then it's pressing on makes, and what we do is press on misses too. So if you only press on makes, you're only pressing less than 50% of the time.
Yeah.
So we're like, we need to press the entire game. So when the other team gets the rebound, we're pressing.
Wow.
And it's had a lot of like different adaptations that we've had to go through, but we feel pretty good about our press on misses now. And that whole thing just relates back to our brand. And that's always what I want to do, is just continue to like instill this brand that our players love, that our students love, that our community loves, that kind of is totally unique to compared to what anyone else does.
Yeah, you know, because I honestly feel like most like teams, you know, they set that goal for the year, and yep. then that year's over, then they go to the next. Mm-hmm. Whereas yours is more, you know, long term, kind of just like building it over time.
For sure.
And also too, I don't think I've ever heard of pressing off of like a miss.
Yeah.
Like I don't know if like I've ever like I can't recall an experience where like I've ever had that, but that might be something that I use when I'm a coach when I'm older.
It's so cool. So I have access to Synergy, so that means I have access to like 1,000 college teams, D1 through D3 to NAIA, women's, men's, right?
Wow.
And I've searched and searched, and I've found 2 teams. They're both in Division II men's, and not or like they're the best 2 teams in Division II most yeah. of the time. West Liberty and Nova Southeastern. Really good teams. So they have the best guys and they're pressing on misses. So it's probably going to work out for them. And it does.
Yeah.
We don't have the best guys and we press on misses. So sometimes it doesn't yeah. work out as well for us, but we always believe it's the best thing to do. And that one of the things you say, like no one's prepared for that.
No one.
Like, right. Like you could be a really good team and you're about to play US. You can't simulate pressing on misses in practice.
No.
And you also don't have a press break for pressing on misses. Like,
no.
So we think it gives us some advantages that teams really can't prepare for. And obviously, like, if we're playing St. Ed's, I'm a realist. Like, they're probably going to beat us most of the time. But this could give us the chance where we get one time. If we have to beat them one time, maybe it gives us a chance to beat us. We can beat them one time. And that's all you have to do, right, in the playoffs. So
yeah, that's it.
So that's why we kind of do it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So what role do you believe communication plays in your coaching approach? And how do you ensure that it's effective?
Yeah, so communication is extremely important. I think it builds the foundation for both teaching, so teaching a player what they need to learn, and then the relationship part of it. So probably the biggest 2 things in coaching, teaching yeah. and relationships. I always think there's a coach who said this on a podcast. She always asks herself, what does it feel like to be coached by me? I think that's such an important thing. So when I'm giving feedback to a player, I'm always trying to think about, like, what does it feel to be coached by me, right? So one thing, obviously, you want to be empowering to your players. You want them to feel like, hey, I believe in you, like you can do it. Because I think a lot of coaches think that confidence can't be given to a player. And I certainly think that a coach can support a player's confidence by what they say, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we'll talk about this probably with mental health, but
yeah.
words do matter. And I think traditionally coaches think words don't matter, yeah. right? But they definitely do, because you wouldn't want a player to say something to a teammate or a player to say something to a coach that was demeaning. So why would we let coaches, who are supposed to be the mature people, to talk down to players, right? And I've been in situations where I've heard coaches do that, and I've also been in situations where, like, wow, that guy is so inspiring, so motivating.
Yeah.
And that's who I want to be. So I think about, what does it feel like to be coached by me? And then in terms of, like, teaching, I think it's so important. So one of the first things I did with a team a few years ago was say, how, like, what is the most beneficial thing for me to say for feedback? And then on the opposite end of the spectrum, what do you hear coaches say that are just like not helpful, right? And a lot of times players will say, like, well, when I miss a layup, it's not helpful for a coach to say you need to make your layups. Like, that's just not helpful.
Yeah.
It's stating the obvious.
Yeah.
So if we've missed 7 layups in the first half and we come into halftime, we're screaming like we need to make layups, like they're going to be like, yeah, thank you. Like,
yeah.
Someone who knows nothing about basketball could tell us that.
Yeah.
Right? So you need to be specific. You need to be feedback oriented where it's helping the team get to success. And so those are things I'm always thinking about. And you just have to be, as a coach, every single word you say, you have to have intent. Right. So if that means like bad play happens and you just take a deep breath before you shout something, right, that's probably a better idea than just emotionally reacting to every single thing.
Yeah. Yeah, like I mean, I've had, you know, some very good coaches throughout my time, like you, for example. And also
Thank
I've
you.
had some very bad coaches that, you know, would kind of just put you down 24/7. But words 100% matter. I mean, it is so crucial. I mean, the one thing I always like wanted to hear in a coach is that you have the green light just to shoot, just to drive at any time. I've only gotten it once throughout like my time in basketball, and let me tell you how much of a game changer that is to hear. Because, you know, for example, you know, your teammates or, you know, some other coaches might say, oh, well, that's a bad shot, or but, you know, you're not looking at the whole skill set. You know, if that person can shoot from Steph Curry range, or that person can drive like, you know, Michael Jordan, then it's like, okay, you it's like if you once you give them the green light and they see that opportunity, that they're going to take it, and they're not going to feel like, okay, well, maybe I shouldn't do this, or should I, or panic or hesitate. They're just going to go right to it. And it's just so important. And even just being, I mean, being a coach, just uplifting your players, I'm sure, you know, you've seen throughout your time how important that's been.
Yeah, it's extremely important. I think one thing that when you were talking there, I heard a great analogy, and I actually just brought this up to a kid I'm helping in track with his mental skills. There's three kind of types of ways to perform anything. You could be careful, right, which is caring too much. You could be careless, which is caring not at all. And then there's carefree. And that's how we want players to play. I actually just heard LeBron. This kid sent me a clip of it in Bronny's first game, and he was like, "You need to play carefree." And I was like, "That's the word is carefree." And when you have empowering coaches who want you to be the best player you can be and utilize all your skills, then that's kind of how you get a player to that point where they can play carefree.
Yeah, and that's something that, like, you know, when I'm a coach, that's definitely, you know, what I'm going to tell my players and to kind of motivate them.
Yeah, it's awesome.
So when I was doing my research, I actually found on this website called CoachTube, I found Coach Nick's, you know, it was like an article or kind of like a book,
Clinic, I think they
yeah,
call it.
clinic. So Coach Nick has a little coaching clinic about spacing, and spacing is so important in the game of basketball. Whether you're on transition or you're playing half court offense, spacing is key. So what are some key spacing principles that you emphasize in your coaching, and how do they impact team dynamics?
Yeah, so it's interesting because probably since I wrote that, which I think was my first year at US, so 4 years ago, things have changed, which is a good thing, right? If I believed every single word I wrote at that point, it probably wouldn't be a good thing for me. So now I would say, I mean, I definitely didn't write about this back then, is one of the biggest things, and when you watch us play, you could probably say this is true within the first minute, is we play from way behind the arc. That means shooting from way behind the arc, but it also means just like filling way behind the arc. Because what we found is when we were hugged up to the 3-point line, it was way easier to deny, right? Because you don't have to go as far out. And also, even if teams weren't denying, they were just being really good at kind of mucking things up, right? They were just kind of compact, and we were compact because they were compact. We couldn't circulate the ball. We couldn't get it moving, right? So now when you watch us play, like, we don't have volleyball lines on our court because we don't have volleyball, but if you think about where volleyball lines are, like, that's where we want guys catching the ball. So they're always going to feel free because defenders don't go that far out there. And then, thankfully, even better, we have guys who can shoot from out there. So our rule is, we have two roles on our team. One is Dame Lillard's, and the other role are Zion Williamson. So guys who are Zions are not allowed to shoot threes for us, not allowed to take jumpers. Dames are empowered to shoot jumpers, and it's important to say that we have shooting tests that determine this. It's not like I just wake up out of bed and say, "You guys are allowed to shoot and you guys aren't," in terms for jump shots. So we do tests every day, and they're able to go from a Zion to a Dame in the middle of the year, so they can work on it and get better. But I think it helps because it really empowers players, like, hey, anytime we drive, which is a huge component of our offense, right? Get in the paint. Anytime the ball comes from the paint and you're a Dame, shoot the ball. Shoot the ball. And constantly. Constantly. I mean, obviously there's a part of coaching where you're like, don't take that shot,
yeah,
right? That's not a good shot. The fadeaway 15-foot shot, probably not the best shot for you. I hope that my players would say, about equally as I hear that, I also hear, why didn't you shoot that three-pointer? It came from the paint. Like, literally every time it comes from the paint, you should shoot the three. We've done our job. We've tried to get a two-pointer. We didn't get it. Guy helped. Kick it out. You're a Dame. You've shown in practice that you are able to hit 33% or more of your shots. Shoot the three, right?
Yeah.
So it goes back to, like, I know we don't give that to everyone because we don't think that would be mathematically the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
But there, I mean, usually it's 80 to 90% of our team totally have the green light in those situations, which is a lot because that's our offense. And then you'll see, like I said before, we want to make half-court offense a track meet. And so every single time we drive, guys are moving in what we call a whirlpool. So we're all moving in a circle, every single player on the court. So a guy drives right, that guy is going to fill behind me right. And then that guy is going to move right into his spot. And it's just a constant whirlpool. And this just creates like little mini races all across the court, right? And it helps maintain that spacing because we don't have guys running into each other, right? And we have guys in the spots the whole time throughout the possession.
Yeah.
And then you ask, like, what does it create in terms of team dynamics? Yes. I think it makes it predictable for our guys to know, I drive, I know there's going to be a guy behind me who's probably not going to be guarded by the defense because no one emphasizes it like we do. Right, there's going to be a guy who helps, then there's going to be a guy who drops. So that pass is probably not going to be open because that's how every team defends in America. Mm-hmm. But the guy behind me is now wide open. So we just play off of 2 feet, come to a jump stop, and hopefully hit that guy. And I think it makes it predictable for us, but also for the defense, makes it completely hard to guard and like look really complex. Guys are constantly moving, right? But for us, it's the same thing every time.
Yeah.
We know where guys are. So it's good for us, bad for them. That's the bottom line.
Right. And, like, also, too, I mean, just kind of, like, thinking about that, like, if I were to drive wing and there's someone in the corner,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not bad, but the problem is, like, it either trap you or it just kind of makes it too easy. You know, if you don't really have a good shooter in the corner,
yeah,
that's not going to take it really quick and shoot it, then it's kind of like, okay, well, then you're stuck in the corner. You have to bring it all the way back up again. Whereas, you know, if you're driving a right side baseline, you can have someone, you know, if the paint's wide open, you can have someone just slip, cut, easy layup.
Yep.
And plus, even too, I think when me and my dad, I think we came to your game versus Gilmore, mm-hmm. you know, most of your points started off within the paint.
Yeah.
And then eventually that translated to some threes.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the thing for us is like, we shoot more threes than anyone, and I could say that because I literally have the stats of like 6 years of high school teams.
Yeah.
And we have the highest percentage of 3-point shots compared to our field goals. But it's not because we just jack up. I mean, we do sometimes, don't get me wrong. But they're most of the time, hopefully, it's shots from paint to outside, right? It's so much easier to shoot when the ball's coming from the paint versus the ball's coming from side to side. And I have stats on that. Like, I track it. Shots from the paint, we shoot like 40% on threes. Shots that are like what we call neutral, we never create an advantage. We never got in the paint, more like 30%. So you use those stats to say, like, why are you shooting 30% shots? We need to get 40% shots from three. And another thing we say, when we're at our best, when US is at our best, we love two-pointers like three-pointers. When we're not at our best, we love three-pointers and like two-pointers. Because the two-pointer is always going to be better because we shoot layups only. So our good two-pointers are, like I stated though, like 65 to 70%.
Wow.
Right? And then, so you get in there, you have to try to, we have to try to create those two-pointers every possession. But then, hey, we tried, we kicked it out, we didn't get those twos, shoot the three. That's a 40% shot. But don't just pass it around a few times, no paint touch, three. That's a 30% shot. And definitely don't turn it over because that's a 0%.
Awesome. So this is something that me and you have been talking about for a while, obviously with the podcast. You know, mental health is truly, truly important. I mean, you know, I've had my personal struggles and, you know, I'm sure there's tons of people out there that have gone through this kind of similar thing. But, me and Coach Nick went out to eat, and we were just kind of talking. And you know, I think I haven't seen you in probably like three to 4 years. And we instantly just started talking about mental health and, just all of that within the game of basketball, even in life in general.
Yep.
And this is something that we've been looking forward to. So why do you believe prioritizing mental health is essential for athletes? And how do you incorporate this into your coaching practices?
Yeah, so I think, first of all, players, athletes in general, work so hard on physical skills, right? They're always in the weight room. They work on technical skills, so their shot form, right? Or their tactical skills, so the things that the coaches put in for their offense. And yet, there's a huge component that's missing, and that's a psychological component, right? And everyone, I think, would agree that mental skills are really important, right? Like golfers, I'm sure there's a ton of mental stuff, right? Tennis, tons of mental. And yet, I don't think coaches, and it's at no fault of their own, because it's hard to find these things. Like, it took me a while to really understand it, but we don't do a good enough job of teaching those tools. Like, how many coaches, if you think about practice time, like I just said, well, we do 2 hours a week of weight room, and we do 4 hours a week of practice on the court. And how many minutes go to mental skills? Zero. Right? So it's a huge component, and there's no reason we should prioritize physical over mental, because it's all health, right? It's all a component of health. And then the second thing I would say is, I think every single person would agree that if I was a coach and I said, hey, you're an athlete, I can help you with confidence. I can give you specific tools that you can use before and during and after games that could help build your confidence. Everyone would say, yes, that would be a huge help, right? If I could say, I could give you specific tools that could help you bounce back after you miss a shot or turn the ball over, everyone would say that would be really helpful, right? And yet we just don't do that as coaches, and that's kind of what I'm trying to help bring into the conversation. And you're obviously doing a good job by asking a lot of good questions about it too.
No, I mean it's like so important. And I mean going back to that, that 0%, you're working on that physical, you're working on all the other stuff, but there's really no time for like mental. I mean, yeah, okay, you're learning plays, but that's not really focusing on, you as a whole. That's just you focusing on like the game. And the one thing too is like with athletes, I feel like at times, you work so hard on the physical that eventually your mental becomes burnt out at times. And I feel like not many athletes, talk about that. I feel like they're just kind of just burnt out and they're going through the motions, just trying to get back. But yeah, I mean, obviously, we'll get more in depth with these questions, but.
Yeah, I mean, there's one thing. So the reason it really hit me, maybe two things. So we were playing Hawken 2 years ago, and I knew we had a player. His name is Jonathan, and I know he would be okay with me saying this because he gave a senior speech about it, because that's how important it was to him. He was really nervous, and I would even say anxious, in before, during, and after games. And he came to me and we started talking, and I really didn't know a ton about sports psychology, but I really wanted to help him. So this is kind of how this all started. But when I was watching against Hawken, which was the first time he ever started to implement the tools now, I was watching our entire team, and it kind of hit me that it's not just Jonathan. It's like every single player. Like, we're playing our rival. There's supposed to be intensity. There's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to be competitive. And I'm watching this game, and one of our most athletic kids dropped the ball out of bounds, just dropped it. I was like, what the heck just happened? Like, I've never seen him drop anything. He's so athletic, so coordinated, just dropped it, right? And then I'm seeing guys who just don't look like they're having fun at all. And like, this is supposed to be the most fun game of your career. The intensity was crazy. The crowd was packed, and we lost. And I was just like, what the heck is going on here? So I surveyed the entire team anonymously, and it was a lot of questions, but the two questions I want to talk about, the first thing was, how prepared do you feel for games? And every single person on the team gave that like a thumbs up. Like, I feel prepared.
Yeah.
And then the next question was, how many of you feel frequently or always nervous, anxious, or worried during games? And the answer to that was 50% of the team. So we all feel prepared, yet half of us feel extremely worried. So how do those things? It's because we don't teach enough about the tools. And then it hit me, like, in that year, I only worked with a few of our guys. Now it's every single kid. There's no, like, every single kid can needs confidence. Every single kid needs these skills. It's skills, right?
Yeah.
It's just like, it's normal. And then that's where, like, we really started to dive deep. And I think the players really like it and really benefit from it.
Yeah. I mean, like, this kind of goes into, like, my next question, but I kind of have a little story for you too.
Mm-hmm.
So my sophomore year, we were playing at North High School, and it was just like any other normal game. And, you know, I was playing, having a good time. I think I probably missed like three shots. And I just remember just going back and forth. And eventually, like, my feet start to feel like I had like stones on them. And I remember just like I was like freaking out, like in my head, I was like,
yeah,
like what is going on? Like, it was very hard to breathe. My feet, and then, like, there was a good amount of people there, but like it still just felt very scary.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember, like, my coach, like, he pulled me out, and I was like, hey, like, you need to just like sit me like for, like, the rest of the game. Like, I probably played like three more minutes, but it was just very frightening.
Yeah.
And I remember going back to my mom after the game, and I was like, mom, like you wouldn't believe like what just happened. Like, I, you know, I was feeling very dizzy, just like my feet were just numb. Mm-hmm. Like, I felt like I wasn't moving. I felt like I was just all over the place. And it was very scary. And I told my mom, I was like, mom, like, I'm just gonna quit basketball. She's like, you're not quitting basketball. Like, you know, I was like, but mom, I was like, you don't understand like how this felt. And this kind of goes into my next question, because my friend, also a friend, also my old trainer, Dan, shout out Dan from CrossFit, shout out all the CrossFit crew. They truly made me into a beast. And I remember I was talking to Dan about everything that happened, and Dan introduced me to meditation, mm-hmm. with the Wim Hof breathing, and how important the breath is.
Mm-hmm.
So my next question is, can you share how you integrated meditation and yoga into your training, and what specific benefits have you observed from your players?
Yeah, so I think with yoga, we'll start with that. We do it a lot in the off season, then we do it a lot day before a game. And I think the biggest reason we do it, at least I would say, maybe our players would say other things, is going through hard is really important. And there's research that shows that people who practice yoga have higher pain tolerances because they know how to get through it.
Wow.
And they do it with the things you said, like mindfulness and being present. And it's funny because right now I'm working with this track kid, and he runs the 400 meter, which is one of the hardest because it's a distance where you have to go fast.
Yeah.
But it's also a distance that your body doesn't want to go that fast for that long,
yeah.
Right? And the pain after is incredible. I mean, they're like, even the best 400 meter people in the world have a tons of pain. Like, you can't get around that pain, right? So I'm kind of fascinated with people like 400 meter runners and ultra marathoners and all these,
yeah,
people who just like take on pain, right? And that's kind of what we do with yoga, is like, you've got to put yourself through some physical pain and develop the mental skills to get past that and show yourself that you can get past that. So in terms of meditation, we have a routine. I help co-create with my athletes a individualized routine for every single player for before games. So they each have a sheet in a folder. And they all, like, I don't really tell them this is when you're going to do it, but I just put it in there. And some guys do it for 2 minutes, and some guys do it for 25 minutes. You don't even know where they went before the game. They go into a random classroom in a weight school. Like, it's crazy, right? But I all think they benefit from it. So there's multiple things on their sheets. There's breathing exercises. There's reminders from me about different things. Like sometimes it's different quotes, sometimes it's things that I think, sometimes it's things that they're focusing on. I think one thing I wanted to ask you, my big question, and then I'll continue. Where do you think confidence comes from? Like, how would you say, if you could, like, give me your definition of, like, what's the foundation of confidence? Where would you say it comes from?
I would say for myself, it definitely comes from within. I mean, it's definitely, like, it's something that, you know, I mean, I was once a very shy kid, very just, like, you know, to myself. But at times, like, I kind of had to grow out of that, grow out of, you know, just being that shy kid. I mean, I would say that I've always been outgoing, but I definitely get some shyness from my mom, for sure. Yeah, just, like, just kind of just being an extrovert, just trying to put yourself in different situations, you eventually gain that confidence. And, you know, with basketball, like, I was never really, like, good. I was never really good until I kind of had some motivation, kind of people just telling me, hey, like, you have this potential. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not using it to your advantage. And that's what kind of instilled that confidence. Like, okay, maybe I have this ability to be that guy. Maybe I have this ability to be that good of a shooter or be that good of just a good teammate. And I feel like just confidence can just go a long way once you put yourself in uncomfortable spots and you experience things within life.
Yeah.
And, you know, that just builds who you are. That builds you as a person. Like, okay, then you can say to yourself before big things, you know, interviews, you know, going to class, like, hey, like, I can do this. I can get through this exam. I can get through this interview. Just like, it just comes from within, but it also comes from others around you that support you and really, like, want you to succeed.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good, you hit multiple things. A lot of people think it just comes from repetitions and experience, right? And I would say that's the foundation.
Yeah.
Like Bill Parcells has a quote, it's from demonstrated ability. So I think that's the foundation, because you have to have credible experiences. You can't just say, oh, I'm the best shooter in the world. I've never made a three-pointer, but I'm the best. Like, okay, that's fake confidence, yeah, right? But I think there's another component which you hit, which is awesome, which is how you talk to yourself, right? So some of the best, most hardest working players I've ever coached had the worst confidence.
Yeah.
Right? So there has to be more to it than repetition. Like this kid, Jonathan, practiced more. We were in every single day, Mother's Day, Sundays, like always 3 hours every day. Okay. And yet didn't have confidence. So it's more to it than demonstrated ability, I think. My kind of working definition is it's the past experiences that you choose to recall and value.
Yeah.
So much about confidence is about memory, because I think there's a lot of players who do well, but then they forget, right? You have a big game. 2 weeks later, maybe you had a bad game. You forget about the good game. Or you are working on this thing, maybe you're shooting, you shoot well, but then you had two big turnovers at the end. You're not thinking about the made shots, you're thinking about the turnovers.
Yeah.
But you had good shots, right? So what we choose to remember is really important. So this year I've seen something that I really like that I'm going to do for guys who really want to focus on confidence is create a confidence resume. So what that means is, like, if we think about a job resume, this is why I deserve the job. These are my experiences. These are my qualifications. These are my skills. Think about a confidence resume. This is the reason I deserve to be confident. And list all the things. I had a great game against Beachwood last year. Put it on there, right? I've worked really hard for this. I had more off-season hours than anyone. Put it on there. All these things. And then review them constantly. When you're feeling down after a bad game, review it.
Yeah.
Before a game, review it. Right? Maybe even make a little highlight tape. Like, I was working really hard on this layup, and then I made it against West Jago. Put it on there, right? Put on the highlight film. And that's how you build confidence, is now I'm choosing to remember those things. And then you could bring those with you at the biggest moments of the biggest games.
Wow. You know what was crazy is that's what I actually did yesterday. So, you know, there are times, like, you know, I'm always very confident, but at times I put a lot of doubt on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And because, like, I feel like I'm not doing like almost enough at times. I feel like, you know, I'm not doing this or that. But what I did last night before bed, I listed out everything that, like, I've accomplished so far, and I listed the things that I want to achieve in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, looking back on that, it kind of just, you know, just made me proud, and it made me think to myself, like, you know, little Marcelo back then, like, would be very proud of the Marcelo that you are today, just from, you know, what you've gone through, the experiences that you've had. So it's like, you know, when you think about that, it just brightens up your day and just kind of just makes you just think about, okay, like, I have the skills, I have the abilities to accomplish this, yes, or do this better. So
yeah, and it's like, we are so hard on ourselves, right?
We are.
And I mean, I've coached a lot of people who would label themselves as perfectionists, right? And they say things to themselves that, like, I heard JJ Redick say a great thing on a podcast. He said, basketball is a game of imperfection. I'm like, yes, so true.
Yeah.
The best shooters in the world miss more than they make.
Yeah.
Right? The best players in the NBA average the most turnovers. The best quarterbacks average the most interceptions. Like, there are mistakes that happen. You have to be able to bounce back from them.
So kind of going off of that, how do you foster an open environment within your team where players feel comfortable discussing their mental health and well-being? Obviously, a lot of players, like even like myself, it took a lot of confidence, took a lot of courage to tell my parents about, you know, like kind of the anxiety that I was dealing with, like before a game. And even, I'll never forget too, I dislocated and broke my finger in an open gym game. I was out 3 months. I come back, I get cleared the day of tryouts. And like, when you first come off an injury, like for your first time and you're shooting for the first time, you're obviously worried that you're going to get hurt again. You just have a lot of anxiety. And I was telling my coaches, I'm like, hey, like, I don't know if, like, I feel prepared. I don't know if I feel ready for this. Like, oh, you're fine. Throughout the whole tryout, I was just a nervous nutshell. Yeah. I had so much anxiety. I was just kind of just going through a lot. And yeah, it just takes a lot to open up, you know, to the people like around you.
Yeah, I think when we first start talking about mental health, like at the beginning of the season, I have a collection of clips,
yeah,
from really prominent athletes. So obviously Kevin Love has opened up about it.
Yeah.
Julius Randle does a lot of meditation. I have a really cool clip from the Knicks, like local broadcast, where they talked about it for like 2 minutes, where he does a guided meditation with the, I think, strength coach of the Knicks. And it talks about, like, he's regained his joy for the game. There's a great clip of Novak Djokovic, tennis players I love to learn from because they're so into it mentally.
Yeah.
And he says that mental skills are skills. Like, the interviewer is like, how did you get the mental gift? And he's like, it's not a gift. I work on it every day. And I think when you are an athlete in high school and you see those people, Simone Biles stopping at the Olympics last time, then coming back and doing it for herself and not for anyone else, yeah, all of these examples are like the best people, the best performers in the world are going through these struggles. It's okay for everyone in this room to have the same things. And they're still doing really well. One of my favorite things to do is I have like a list of quotes of really famous people who have said, like, I get really nervous before a track meet or whatever. There's like five of them. And I show the quotes on the board and I ask my players, like, and it doesn't say who said them. Okay. And I'm like, would you guys recruit these guys? Do you think these are really successful people? And the answer is usually no. The assumption is no. And yet it's Roger Federer. It's like all these crazy, it's UCLA softball coach who has won more games than like anyone ever. It's all these famous people who've won so much. It's like, now you can see, like, it's just a natural thing. And the reason it's natural is because that's how we've been developed. Like, nerves and anxiety and worry have been like hardwired into our brains. And all you need are ways to kind of slow those things down, right? Yeah. You don't have to eliminate them, because a little bit of nerve is good. Like,
yeah,
it makes you more aware, right? A little bit of adrenaline, a little bit of focus, a little bit more drive, right? A little bit of anger is helpful for motivation. But when it becomes too much, then it obviously affects your health. And that's, yeah, what we try to not have happen as much. So I think those clips are really important. Those quotes are really important. And just seeing all those people who everyone looks up to, who we think are invincible, they're not invincible. They're just working through it just like everyone.
Yeah. Kind of like shows too, you know, we think of these athletes as just like totally different, just outside of like this world. However, they're people just like us,
Yes.
and they go through the same things just like how we do on a daily basis.
Yep.
So, overall, what have you learned about yourself as a coach throughout your experiences at both Orange and US? And how do you continue to grow and evolve in your coaching journey?
I think the first thing I've learned is that basketball coaching is a calling for me. It's like really deep passion. I have a really deep passion for it. I live by a quote that is, God calls you to the place where your deepest gladness and the world's deepest hunger meet. So, like, I think my players need me, and I need them because how passionate I am about them and about the sport and about their health and their, like, helping support them, right? And it's perfect that we're here at the same time, like, being together. And that's, it's just a calling for me. So on days where it's really hard, which coaching can be really stressful, right? We got parents, we got long practices, we got unbelievably, incredibly tough losses, right? But I just always fall back on, like, the next day I'm going to get up and I'm going to be right back at it. And it's not because I need to, it's because I love it. So that's the first thing I've really learned. The second thing I would say is one of my core values is loyalty. And you have to be so loyal as a coach because, especially when you're dealing with 14 to 18 year olds, they're not always going to be perfect. And you have to love them as much as you do when they hit the game-winning shot, as when they do something stupid, right? They don't do well in the classroom. They do something they shouldn't have done. They say something they shouldn't have done. They turn the ball over at the end of the game. Whatever. You have to be extremely loyal. Loyalty to me means being there for them and supporting them and believing in their potential even after mistake or failure, or especially after mistake or failure. So I've learned how to kind of cultivate that. So I would say those two things. And then, did you ask me how I have grown?
Yes.
Okay. I would say the biggest thing I do is listen to podcasts. Like, as I work, I'm just listening to podcasts all day long. There's one of my favorite podcasts is called Finding Mastery, and it's a sports psychologist who's the host, and he just doesn't interview sports people. He interviews anyone who's really performing and mastering life in general. So he does interview sports people, but he also interviews crazy, like, ultra marathoners, right? Like, people who are on high lines, thousands of feet in the air, right? Like, people just doing crazy things that no one else is doing. And just talking through their psychology. And it's so enlightening for me. It helps me help my players. It also helps me help myself. And things like, how do I deal with burnout, like, come up in this so much. And it's just the genuine conversation that I just love. So that's one podcast. Love them. And the second is I work for one of the smartest people I know. Our head coach, Coach McDonald, was the head coach at Hiram and Case before coming to US. He's like an encyclopedia of knowledge. I mean, if there's a play that happens, maybe he'll send me a play or I'll send him. He'll be like, I saw this in 1996 at the Final Four, right? Like, it's like, oh my gosh, how did you know that? I mean, he's done clinics in other continents. He just has such a unbelievable IQ, and he has been through everything. I learn something from him every day. He has things like with the jump ball. He could give you seven tips on a jump ball that I never even thought of. His level of knowledge is just unmatched. Free throws. Like, we X out on free throws where we screen the opposite side to get offensive rebounds. Like, just little things like that. I learned something about him for our press every single day. And I've been coaching at US for 4 years. And still, every day, he teaches me something about the press. So, being around someone like that, as you can imagine, makes you so much better of a head coach. And that's really why I'm not dying to be a head coach right now, because every day I feel like I'm still stretching myself because he's such a good teacher and also question asker. Like, he'll ask me questions that will make me think way harder about what we need to do too. So it's just an amazing experience working for him and being able to learn from him.
Wow. That is awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, just having like a mentor like that is just, you know, if anything, you're almost like a student still.
For sure.
Like you're still learning each and every day. And that's something that's just rare.
Yes.
Just to have that kind of mentor with all that experience, all that just leadership experience.
It's a blessing. It
truly is. So now we'll get into the quote of the episode. Obviously, you talked a little bit about, you know, the quote that you live by.
I have another one, though.
All right, awesome. So for those that don't know, the quote of the episode is where I'll say a quote from, like, a famous athlete, coach, and then Coach Nick, he'll talk about what the quote means to him, and then he'll also say a quote that he lives by each and every day. So me and Coach Nick kind of talked about this podcast, or no, not this podcast, this quote outside of the podcast. And, yeah, he mentioned that a few of his players actually have used this quote before. Mm-hmm. So kind of crazy how that all worked out. But legendary coach John Wooden said, "If you're not making mistakes, then you're not doing anything. I'm positive that a doer makes mistakes."
So first of all, I was so happy you picked John Wooden because he's like the class of coaches.
Yeah.
He was also a really good player, which people don't know about. He's the first guy to be inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame as a player and a coach.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
He's a 10-time champion as a coach.
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, this guy knows everything about winning, right? Yeah. And yet, he's talking about failing. So I think one of the biggest things that I try to get my players to understand is that, like I said, with basketball is a game of imperfect, you have to accept failure up front. Like, just go into the game saying, like, I'm going to fail. And when you accept that mistake, when you accept that beforehand, you just get to play so much more carefree, like we talked about. And that's where your best self is. So I think one of the things, here's a good example for basketball. People are so worried about getting crossed over, right? Getting crossed up, put on the ground, right? Like, if you aren't pressuring the ball, you're never going to have the chance to steal it. But if you're always so worried about getting crossed up, you're never going to pressure the ball. Yeah. So, like, yeah, you have to pressure the ball and accept, like, I might fall here, but I also might get that steal that could be huge for us to win. So I think it's such a good quote. It's from such a good person. And I think one of the best things I've ever heard, like, kind of, that immediately thought of this when you sent me this quote, is one thing I heard from a sports psychologist. It is, I wrote it down here, the avoidance of mistakes can invite in mistakes. Wow. And it's so true. Like, when I'm trying to not turn it over, I turn it over. And then, part two, the acceptance of mistakes can repel mistakes. I'm not worried about turning it over, and I don't. Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy. So,
I totally agree with that quote. It's on 5 of our players' sheets. I actually texted one of our players and said, one of my former players put this on our podcast, and he's like, oh, that's such a great quote. Duke Brennan, Boston College. So, yeah, great quote, great person. Good job, Marcelo. You nailed that one.
Awesome. Love it. Love it. Well, do you have anything else to add?
Yeah, I want to add my quote.
Yes, here.
So I picked a quote, which I love quotes, and when I heard this quote, you ever, like, there's something that you think, but you can't really articulate, and then you hear a quote, and you're like, that's what I've been thinking. That's what I felt when I heard this quote. The quote is from Seneca, who's a Stoic in the ancient Greek and Roman times, okay? Right. And if you don't know what Stoicism is, you should look it up because you would love it. It's like about self-control and managing emotions, and it totally relates to everything we've talked about. The quote is, we suffer more often in imagination than reality.
Wow.
So think about the big interview, the big game, and all these negative things are going through your mind. Experience, like, oh my God, what if I flunk this test? What if I stumble during this interview? And then you realize, how many times do you realize after, like, oh, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be?
Yeah.
So why does the suffering happen before? Or, like, you know, like, it never happens during, right? So it's always how we imagine, just like we talked about, those negative thoughts consuming us instead of bringing us back to a rational state where We have that confidence resume. It's like, wait, this is what I accomplished. I don't need to suffer in imagination. I'm just going to go out there and be my best self. So that's a quote that means a lot to me. And I always try to think of that when I kind of go down that path of negativity.
Wow. That quote is true. Like that quote hits the spot, because I feel like everyone just goes through that. Like you're just thinking, man, what if I mess up here? What if I mess up here? But then when you're done, it's like all the pressure is off. Everything's done. You're like, why was I so anxious? Why was I so worried about that? Everything was fine.
Is that amazing?
Truly amazing. I definitely will never forget that quote, Coach. That is
Seneca. Look him up. He's like, he's got a lot of good quotes.
Yeah. Well, hey, that'll do it for this episode from the Lions Cove podcast. Thank you again, Coach Nick. Always a pleasure. Coach Nick, one of the best coaches I've ever had. Obviously, he didn't coach me, but, you know, outside of, like, basketball, you know, definitely helped with player development as well as skills, and definitely taught me some drills and valuable lessons that I still carry till this day. And I'm very thankful that he joined this episode today. You know, great wisdom with the mental health side of sports as well as the game of basketball. Truly a student of the game. And I'm sure in the future we'll have him back on the podcast, talk more about his coaching career as the years go on. So that'll do it for this episode. Make sure to follow FTLC Podcast on Instagram. New episodes every Tuesday. And I'm very excited to share with friends, family, everyone you know. And we'll see you in the next one. Peace.